This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org.
Boy, it's getting hot in here.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Everywhere you look, inflation seems to be approaching like a fire-breathing dragon. This morning, Dow Chemical announced its second big price hike in a month. The company cites the relentless rise in the cost of energy and raw materials. Dow makes ingredients for paint, textiles, glass, cars. Dow's prices will go up another 25% on top of last month's 20% increase. Now, the mining company Rio Tinto has increased the price of iron ore by almost 100%. Let's check in with our man in London, Stephen Beard, on that one. Stephen, why is Rio able to jack up the price so much?
In a word, demand. Steel makers in China, India, and South Korea are desperate for the stuff, and the miners can't keep up with that demand.
And this is different from a commodity like oil that's traded on an exchange. This is the company raising the price.
That's right. And this is what makes this interesting. The iron ore market is dominated by the miners and the steelmakers. There's very little financial trading. So we can't blame this price hike on speculators.
Where are we going to see this price increase reflected?
Well, iron ore, of course, is one of the key ingredients of steel, and steel goes into a vast array of products, cars, industrial machinery, domestic appliances, construction materials. So without any doubt, this is going to provide another upward twist in the global inflationary spiral.
And Stephen, is Rio the only company that's raising the price of iron ore?
The expectation is that the world's biggest miner, BHP of Australia, will follow Rio's example, if not increase its iron ore prices even higher.
Wonderful. Another price increase.
Just what we wanted.
Yeah. All right. Stephen Beard in London. Thanks.
Okay, Scott.
Inflation, of course, is also the top priority for the Federal Reserve. The Fed starts a two-day meeting today, and it's probably going to leave interest rates alone after months of cutting because of the concern for inflation. Wall Street usually likes it when the Fed leaves interest rates alone, but today, not so much. The Dow is down another 75 points to 11,767. The NASDAQ is off by 18, and the S&P 500 has dropped 8. The European markets are down more than 1% so far. In Asia, the markets were flat. Say you're the CEO of a big retail company, and an ad your company didn't design goes viral on the web. It's all over YouTube and other sites. Might be a good thing. Well, JCPenney's in that position, but there's just one problem. The ad seems to encourage teenage sex. Steve Henn has more.
The ad, called Speed Dressing, features two teens standing alone in their bedrooms, getting dressed again and again. They're timing themselves, racing against the clock. And when they're fast enough, the boy heads over to her house. Cute smile, then a shot of mom.
Hey, mom, we're just going to go down to the basement and watch some TV.
Uh-oh. Across the screen, you see the words, "Today's the day to get away with it." Fade to Penny's logo. Penny's executives are reportedly furious, but Jonah Berger at the Wharton School of Business says it's probably impossible to make this ad disappear, no matter how many lawyers the company hires. And from a marketing standpoint, that might not be a bad thing.
This attention to them gets them play among the people that they'd like to be reaching in a little bit more racy or interesting way. But if their regular consumers say, oh my God, this isn't my JCPenney, they can say, well, it's not ours either. We didn't put the campaign together.
In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Tuesday, June 24th on Marketplace.org. The flooding in the Midwest has washed out about 4 million acres of farmland. You know the story with corn prices. Now an Iowa senator is pushing to reclaim environmentally sensitive land. Jeff Tyler explains.
The Conservation Reserve Program pays farmers to set aside environmentally vulnerable land, which is preserved as wildlife habitat.
It's had a significant economic benefit in the states like Iowa, where it is widely enjoyed by farmers because the program provides significant economic incentives to farmers to enroll.
That's Richard Wiles, executive director of the Environmental Working Group. Iowa Senator Charles Grassley wants farmers to plant protected land to offset the corn lost in the flood. Again, Richard Wiles.
The environmental impacts of this would be fairly severe, and the benefits in terms of increased corn production would be almost negligible.
He says lawmakers need to rethink how we use what we already have. A quarter of the U.S. crop goes to ethanol. Wiles suggests the federal ethanol mandate be suspended, freeing up more corn to be sold as food or feed for livestock. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
In Congress today, the focus is on those two untouchables, Social Security and Medicare. A House committee will look at ways to deal with the issues rather than avoid them. Jeremy Hobson has more from Washington.
The Budget Committee will hear from David Walker of the Peterson Foundation. He's in favor of creating a bipartisan commission by next year to give politicians cover from issues they'd rather not touch.
Tough choices are going to have to be made, and the commission may provide a means for those choices to be made sooner rather than later.
Bob Greenstein of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities will also testify, but he doesn't think a commission is the way to solve tough fiscal challenges.
I say that as someone who was a commissioner on the last deficit reduction commission, which was a complete failure.
Greenstein says legislation to create a commission should be put on hold until there's a new president and a new Congress. But he says elected leaders will still have to do the tough negotiating themselves.
A commission cannot succeed in forcing the speaker, the president, the majority and minority leaders to reach agreement if they're not inclined to do so.
In Washington, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
At the state level, some tough choices as well. State budgets are getting hit pretty hard right now. When unemployment goes up, income tax goes down. When people don't shop, sales taxes go down. Danielle Carson looks at how states are coping.
More than two dozen states are in the red because of soaring gas and food prices and a tanking housing market. It's wreaking havoc on the economy's biggest engine, consumer spending. And that's draining state coffers of precious income and sales tax revenue.
There's only a few choices states have at a time like this, and their goal is to choose the one that does the least harm.
Jared Bernstein is an economist with the Economic Policy Institute. He says states can shrink their budget deficits by cutting spending, dipping into reserves, or...
Raising taxes is probably the least worst thing you could do. And if you structure your tax increases so that they don't tend to hit folks in, say, the bottom half or two-thirds of the income scale, that's the right way to do it.
Deficits are a bigger problem for states. Unlike the federal government, states are required to balance their budgets, and they'll do whatever it takes to stay in the black. California, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire are considering tax hikes. Maryland, New York, and Michigan have gone ahead and raised taxes. Maryland, for example, bumped up the tax rate for people in the upper income brackets and also increased the sales and corporate income taxes. State Treasurer Nancy Kopp.
No one likes to have their taxes increased. None of us do. But it was that or cut radically into schools, funding for libraries and health.
According to a study by the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, states are mostly relying on spending cuts to patch their budget holes. Co-author Iris Lav says health care and education are taking the biggest hits.
We have 14 states cutting funding for higher education, which means that's going to prevent middle-income people from access to higher education as the tuition goes up to make up for those cuts.
Lav says the fiscal crisis has yet to bottom out, and that could mean another round of spending cuts if states' budget coffers keep shrinking. But experts say don't expect tax hikes, at least until after the November election. In Washington, I'm Danielle Carson for Marketplace.
The price of oil climbed once again this morning above $138 a barrel. One thing that has a lot of people nervous is what's happening in Nigeria. Production is down some 300,000 barrels a day because of attacks on oil pipelines and rigs. And again, a certain group of militants known as MEND is claiming responsibility. Let's find out more about this situation from our correspondent in Africa, Gretchen Wilson. Gretchen, what exactly does this group want?
Well, just like most of the people who live in the Niger Delta, they want to tap into the billions upon billions of dollars that are being pumped out of the ground. It's an extremely poor area, and they want to get access to the resources that are being pumped out of what they consider their land.
And what about the oil companies who are doing their work here? Some of their workers have been taken hostage and things like that. So how are they involved in this process of trying to prevent these attacks from happening?
Multinational oil companies are very involved with government, trying to figure out what kind of solution they can come up with to get these attacks to stop. One of the things that's notable about the offshore oil attack of the Royal Dutch Shell oil rig is that it happened 75 miles off the coast of Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And up until now, most people had seen these oil rigs as immune from militant attacks. They're very concerned about what this may mean for their future operations. If these could be attacked by guys in speedboats, what does that mean for the future of oil production in the Gulf of Guinea?
And Gretchen, how about the U.S. government? This is the fourth largest supplier of oil to the U.S., being Nigeria. What is the U.S. government doing?
The U.S. government is also very engaged in watching this very closely. As you said, Nigeria is hugely important to U.S. markets. It is the fourth biggest supplier, and the fact that this has been a disruption is pointing many people to try to put pressure on the government of Nigeria to make this problem go away. As American consumers, we go through about 1 million barrels a day from that country alone, so we can't really stand to lose 300,000 barrels a day.
All right, Gretchen Wilson reporting from Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
If you'd like to take the Marketplace Morning Report with you, you'll find the details about our podcast online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.